My name is Christina, and welcome back to the Home for Remote OCs. This is a podcast where friends and I talk about our original characters, the good, the bad, and the self-inserts. And guest, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Rem. I use she, her, and they, them pronouns.
I know I said this earlier, but thank you, Rem, for being the first guest as I get back in the saddle of podcasting on my own.
I'm the guinea pig.
More like, I would like to have someone who has already been on the show and knows the format and knows the general, like, maybe not the tone, but knows the guidelines that I generally try to follow with Wayward.
The and vibes. You're
like, I want to talk about Peregrine Parker. And I was like, perfect. Let's do it.
I do want to do that because she is a delight.
She is. And I think this is the first OC that's been on the show that I can say that I contributed to the creation of. Who is not did. One of my own OCs.
You helped.
I did help. So, Rem, would you like to introduce Peregrine Parker to the audience?
I would love to. How much of an introduction should the audience be getting right now? Am I going to dive into it, or?
How about, like, just, like, a one or two sentence, like, elevator pitch, and then we'll jump into it.
Okay, the little blurb. So Peregrine Parker is my Spider-sona, my Spider-verse OC. She is essentially, what if Spider-Man was a Kamen Rider?
I feel like right off the bat, we do have to mention that there was a Japanese Spider-Man.
And there was.
There was, but he was not a Kamen Rider.
No, in fact, very specifically, he was much closer to Super Sentai and what we would know as Power Rangers here in the North America regions. To the point where he was very popular, and his giant robot specifically was so popular that the season of Super Sentai that came out after his show was the first one to have a Megazord.
Really? I didn't know that we had Leopardon to thank for the concept of a Megazord.
Yeah, Leopardon came before the Megazords. People loved Leopardon.
God bless. And honestly, I do have to admit that I did not know that Spider-Man was big in Japan and had a giant robot named Leopardon until, unfortunately, I read Ready Player One.
Oh, no.
So I'm sorry for besmirching the good audio of my own podcast with the name of that screed of a book, but
I can't believe you said those words in that order.
The two good things about it were my friend Annie's live reactions to it are very funny, and that it introduced me to the fact that in Japan, Spider-Man gets to have a Megazord of his own.
I will also put in there the best CGI Gundam we've ever had.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately. It's just in one of the movie's fight scenes, but, like, it's better than any of the actual CGI Gundam movies that we've had.
Nice. I mean, that's on the animation studio, honestly.
That is on the animation
studio. It's not on Ready Player One.
My other favorite fun fact about Leopardon Spider-Man is that it's not Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He is a teenager who can transform and use the powers of Spider-Man. That is the distinction that they give. He is not technically Spider-Man.
Oh my god.
And it's so funny to me.
I might have to borrow that.
Legally distinct Spider-Man.
Yes. Yeah. But we're not here today to talk about any of those. We're here today to talk about Peregrine Parker.
Who is Spider-Man.
Yes, who is Spider-Man? Or Common Spider, right?
So I ended up actually landing on a different name, like, for in-universe. Common Spider is still kind of the shorthand I've been going for, just because of the pun. But in-universe, I landed on, they've been calling her the Masked Spider.
Nice.
Which, in retrospect, is actually exactly the same thing, just in English.
Yeah. So, Rem, recount for us how you came up with Peregrine Parker and why you came up with Peregrine Parker.
Yeah, so obviously I watched Spider-Verse 2. It was a great movie. And everybody and their mothers has been in Spider-Sona hell ever since that movie came out. We've all been thinking of characters. And I was getting a little frustrated with myself because I kept thinking of twists on Spider-Man that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But they were things that had already kind of been done. And the one that I kept coming back to in my head was, what if Spider-Man was a Kamen Rider? And I was like, oh, we kind of already have Japanese Sentai Spider-Man. He's got the leopard on. I don't want to double up. And then I believe it may have been you pointed out, A, Spider-Man can definitely double up. But B, that's not Kamen Rider, so it's fine. And then I had vague thoughts about it. And then you came to me and you were like, hey, I want to draw Spider-Sonas. And that kind of gave me the kick in the pants to actually come up with more details about her.
And I think I remember that you kind of like gave me like the vibes that you were going with. And I was like, cool, let me make a Pinterest board about it.
And then, you did, and it was the best.
Let me throw me, like, some a whole sketches your board. Way.
Honestly, those sketches were delightful. I could see myself making a Sona for literally every single one of them. Just make that an entire team.
Honestly, it's a lot of fun. And we'll probably also talk about this later, but this is one of my favorite things, I think, to come out of both Into the Spider-Verse and Across the Spider-Verse, is that it's just like, it's so encouraging of people to like, it's very encouraging to get people to make their own characters, because like,
absolutely,
a lot of the times in media, and like, of course I'm not exempt from this, there's a lot of like, oh, I want to make this character concept, but it's already been done before, and like, oh, I want to make a character that transforms with the power of a magical sword, and like, oh wait, that's just He-Man and She-Ra. And at the same time, you know, it's like, there has never been a new story under the sun. Humans have been reiterating the same stories, the same narrative tropes, the same you get a cool sword story since the dawn of time. And also, I think I'm going to quote myself from the Corner Podcast Network Discord here. I'm like, do you have any idea how many Peters Parker there are in the Spider-Verse? There's
so many Peters Parkers.
Like, I think part of it too is like, when it comes to making a Spider-Sona, there is, you know, there's kind of already like the general outline for like characterization and like backstory there. You know, it's like, oh yeah, someone who was like, you had a normal life, you were a decent person, and then someone close to you got injured after, and you had a chance to protect them and you chose not to,
or you, and then you learned about power and responsibility, yeah. And it's, and then a good, you learned time about
power and responsibility, and now you have different iterations on the same archetype of the same building blocks of villains, and it's really cool to see what everyone does with it.
And then Gwen Stacy dies
sometimes. Sometimes Gwen Stacy is trans.
True. I think this franchise in particular was kind of the perfect storm to enable this, because we've had multiverse stories before, mm-hmm. that didn't like kick the same fervor. I think it's because of the first movie that the second movie kicked this on, because the first movie, there was so much emphasis on like, anyone can wear the mask, anyone can be the hero. Mm-hmm. But there was still just kind of like three regular spider people as the main characters. Mm-hmm. With, you know, we had people like Peter Parker that were like kind of on the side, but they weren't the main characters. But then the second one came out and was like, here's 300 spider people. We weren't joking about anyone can wear the mask.
Yeah, literally, here is every iteration on the Spider-Man suit that Chris Anka can think of. God bless him.
It was delightful. I really feel like it was a good 1-2 punch that like led to a lot of this kind of thinking.
And plus, I mean, I think part of it too is that like, and I'm gonna counterbalance this against like everything that mainstream Marvel tries to do with like alternate universes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the difference is that, like, well, I say this having not seen a Marvel movie in theaters, I think, since maybe Infinity War in theaters. And I was like, I didn't like that very much. And then I didn't.
Fair.
I haven't seen a Marvel movie in theaters since. But they've really been trying to push the alternate universes and, like, wow, everyone's coming together across different realities. But I think they are not successful, or at least not as successful as the Spider-Verse movies have been.
And even the Spider-Verse comics, like.
Yes, even. I have heard the Spider-Verse comics are inferior
in. Yes. The movies are better.
In quality of narrative.
The movies absolutely are better than the comics in this particular situation. Mm-hmm. But those comic arcs are much more popular than similar multiversal arcs mm-hmm. for other corners of the Marvel Universe.
I think it's because, especially like when it comes to Spider-Man as a superhero in particular, like, he's always got, like, local stakes in what's going yeah. on.
I distinctly remember seeing, there was a Tumblr post, and this is relevant to this specific podcast, where it was like, the difference is that most stories are, look at all the different worlds there are, and Spider-Verse is, look at all the different yous there are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which is a different vibe, and I feel like definitely contributed to the OC explosion.
Mm-hmm. Because then it's also like, how are you different from other versions of you? What makes your Peter Parker different from all the other Peter's Parker?
Yeah, as opposed to focusing on, like, oh, this is an alternate reality where this event went differently. It's like, mm-hmm. this is a reality where you're a horse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're a car.
You're a car now.
You're a spider that got bit by a radioactive pig.
Or my personal favorite, least favorite, a group of radioactive spiders that got bit by a person.
Yeah.
Oh, I both love and hate Spider-Man so much.
The only version I think of Spiders, well, no. Is Spider-Man the one who was, like, the cook in Across the Spider-Verse?
No, Spider, that might have been,
Man-Spider.
Man-Spider. Maybe. No, Spider-Man is, like, a hive mind of a bunch of radioactive spiders that think they're Peter Parker. And so it's just a Spider-Man suit full of radioactive spiders, and it's horrible. It's, like, yeah. the coolest concept and very interesting, but every time he's on screen, I'm like, I hate this. This is awful.
Yeah. So, let's take it from the top. What's Peregrine Parker's story?
All right, so first off, we're just gonna put this right out here at the top. Peregrine Parker is a Peter Parker, but she trans. Peregrine
Hell yeah.
Parker trans. Because every character should be trans. So Peregrine Parker's world is relatively standard for the type of TV show that she is inspired by. It's a regular-ish world with a couple of small aspects that make it a little bit more high-tech than ours. Mm-hmm. There are weirdly regular monster attacks, you know, roughly once a week on Tuesday nights. and in this particular case, they are, the monsters that show up regularly are vaguely animal-themed cyborgs. They tend to just kind of show up somewhere, do a bunch of damage, hurt a bunch of people, and then either disappear or, like, the military tries to drive them off or something like that. Peregrine is a intern at the Daily Bugle, trying to work her way into things, and she has taken some photos of one of the recent monster attacks, and she spots the logo of the company Alchemax, popular Spider-Man villainous organization, on one of the cyborgs, like on a piece of armor that it's got.
Mm-hmm.
So she decides she's going to find out what's going on so she can break out of being an intern and become an actual, like, reporter photographer.
Mm-hmm. She's showing initiative.
Absolutely. So she sneaks into the nearest Alchemax facility she can find, steals a lab coat, steals a key card, is mm-hmm. checking the place out, and she finds a secret underground lab mm-hmm. Where they seem to actually be building the cyborgs that have been attacking the city.
Mm.
She is checking things out, and then one of the cyborgs starts to, like, wake up, so she just grabs, like, a box of equipment and books it hoping that it'll have some kind of evidence in it. And when she gets home, she finds that it is a prototype of a, like, futuristic tech device that is basically Hammer Space tech, where it is a full suit of cybernetic armor within a small device roughly the size of, like, your fist.
Mm.
With that little bit of that classic Parker know-how, she fixes it up, she gets it working, she modifies it to fit her, and she becomes the Masked Spider, a superhero that uses Alchemax's own cybernetic armor against them to fight the monsters that attack.
Yes.
And then she has all kinds of cool transformation sequences and stuff, because you need those.
Yes. Especially when you are inspired by Kamen Riders. You do specifically need a transformation sequence or two.
It's gotta play music and everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, something that came to prominence in Across the Spider-Verse, and that personally I kind of have a beef with, but we don't need to get into why, is the concept of canon events, which are essentially, like, I guess you would call it, like, narrative touch points, narrative similarities that at least Miguel O'Hara alleges happens to every single spider-themed hero. Does Peregrine have any kind of, like, I guess you would call them, like, similar events in her personal history that are analogous to stuff that other spider heroes have gone through, or is she blissfully free of the plague of canon events?
Yeah, so I gave this a little bit of thought, and I think her Uncle Ben isn't a family member in this case.
Mm-hmm.
I think her big early loss thing would have come about before she actually got the powers.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought process here is, so she went sneaking into this Alchemax thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she maybe, possibly, didn't necessarily tell people where she was going. Because impetuous Parker. And so my thought is, she's an intern. She would have likely been paired with, like, a senior reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And my idea that I had was that Ned Leeds, senior reporter, would have been her, like, mentor at the Bugle, and tried to follow her into the Alchemax facility, but got caught, and thus leading into one of the first fights that she has as the Masked Spider, because cyborgs generally are based on people.
Yes.
And so my thought is that maybe the Hobgoblin, Ned Leeds, is the first fight that she has.
Ooh.
Where she has to, like, make that realization of, oh, this is serious. This isn't a thing I can play around with.
This is a good point then for me to ask, is there a way for her to, I guess, free the people who have been used as the base for these monstrous cyborgs? Or is it a kind of like a explode? Bye, guys.
I haven't
Sorry.
Decided yet on that part. Mm-hmm. I mean, my first instinct is they explode because it's Kamen Rider, but
yeah.
I feel like it would fit the themes of a Spider-Man to find a way to do that. But I'm thinking it would be something that would come, like, later in her season. Maybe after she's already failed to save Ned.
Ooh. I just had an idea. Can I pitch it to you?
I love pitches. Please.
So, you know how the Venom symbiote in the comics, and I'm assuming also in the movies, is weak to high-frequency sonic vibrations?
Yes.
What if it's, like, either, like, a villain goes against Peregrine with, like, some kind of localized EMP gun, or, like, some kind of sonic machine that, like, functionally disables the cybernetic suit?
Ooh.
But, like, obviously, you know, like, that means, like, it's gonna be her, like, oh, I might use this, but then I might have to I might be without my own suit for the rest of this fight if it doesn't go well.
I do like that. That's very good. That also ties into, because I'm not gonna lie, I brainstormed a bunch of villains, like how they could play into it. A couple of those kind of get a little close to that and flirt with it, mm-hmm. but not quite to something that like she would be able to do on purpose. So that's definitely something I am tempted to. You know, I'm gonna fold this in. There's something she can. I need to figure out who it would come from and all that, but I like that idea of something that could shut down the cyborg part.
And I guess that ties into what my next question was going to kind of be, which is like, I know something that you had talked about initially was like that Peregrine Parker is someone who has to kind of like, I guess, steal all of the technology and components that she uses to build and maintain her own suit. Is that still something that you have kept for the current version of her?
Yes. I have not only kept that, I have expanded it a little bit into some of the other recurring characters in her story.
Nice. I want to hear about those after you finish what you were going to say.
Yes, perfect. So what I have kind of zeroed in on is pretty much every Kamen Rider series has like a specific theme to it. Not necessarily a moral to the story, but like a
motif.
Yeah, like a motif and kind of a emotional slash philosophical question that it asks. And so I was looking at this one and I was like, all right, Spider-Man. I've got this. Mm-hmm. Combining with the whole cyborg theme, I wanted to have themes of like a technology arms race of like people just keep making stronger and stronger things and I need to keep getting stronger and stronger to fight. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, because it's Spider-Man, great power, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. I like the core question of the series being, because we can, does that mean we should? Mm. Like, hey, we figured out how to make like cybernetic weapons of war. Is that a good thing, though?
The difference between great responsibility and great obligation.
Exactly.
And I'm sure the people at Alchemax are like, just because we can, we should, and we should not be prosecuted or persecuted for it.
Yeah, come on. Like, do you come expect on. Me to not make a cyborg? I figured out how to make cyborgs.
Alchemax. Anyway.
They're not the best.
No, I mean, morally speaking, are they ever?
Not really.
But yeah, I was going to ask you about the recurring characters for Peregrine Parker.
Okay, so I've got more than I probably needed, but I did the thing. So
go for it.
I'm going to start with the main big bats, Alchemax themselves, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But what I came up with is, there is a triumvirate of scientists that are working together to try and develop the ultimate organism as, like, the next evolution of humanity.
Mm. This is a Kamen Rider thing.
It's very much a Kamen Rider thing. So they've got a robotics expert, they've got a biotech expert, mm-hmm. and they've got an energy researcher. Because mm-hmm. obviously, if you're going to have a cyborg running around, it's got to have a really good battery. mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they're names that might be recognizable to Spider-Man people. So we have Alistair Smythe, mm-hmm. commonly known in the comics as the Spider Slayer, is their robotics expert. He's also the one responsible for making the little grunts that attack outside of the normal, like, big cyborgs. You know, you have to have the putties.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So he makes the Spider Slayer robots. And then we have our biotech expert, Dr. Kurt Connors. Mm-hmm. Who does, later in the season, turn himself into a lizard-themed cyborg to try and defeat the Armored Spider. Mmm. And then Dr. Octavius is our energy technology expert. And so those are kind of the three in charge of the science of these cyborgs. Mm-hmm. And they're very behind-the-scenes, shadowy scientist types, so they're not often going to show up on the scene. Except in, like, big episodes.
Yeah, yeah. But their impacts are still felt in the rest of the series, even if they don't make an appearance on screen.
Exactly. And realistically, they probably appear on screen pretty regularly, just not necessarily in front of Peregrine.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, like, regularly recurring villains, so obviously, late in the season, the lizard becomes a recurring villain because he wouldn't let himself be defeated in one episode. And then I came up with the idea of, so she stole this little prototype and tweaked it to make her costume. They're obviously still going to be working on this tech.
Yeah.
They're not going to just dump it. And Kamen Rider does have a long and storied history of rival and enemy Kamen Riders.
Mm-hmm.
So, Alchemax is going to have Armored Combatant Elites, or Aces. The Aces are basically enemy Kamen Riders that show up. And I decided on a couple of them. Because I am a sucker for the classics, I put Shocker in there.
Nice.
As an enemy ace. Shocker is an ace that is working directly with the scientists. He is generally seen being spooky and dramatic, like standing on a rooftop watching a battle and things like that. And then he tends to, like, swoop in at the end of the battle, throw a couple of attacks at Peregrine, grab the defeated cyborg, and run. Because he is in charge of making sure that the technology gets recovered.
Ah, okay.
And so whenever she gets an upgrade, it's usually because she managed to drive him off long enough to get some gear off the battlefield.
Go on, get!
Get out of here!
Get out of here!
I have Harry Osborn as the Goblin, who is an ace user that is not associated with Alchemax. He is using a rival technology developed by Oscorp.
Ooh, okay.
And he tends to be that, like, wrench in the works third party fighter, where it's like, he's gonna fight the Alchemax people, but he's also gonna fight Peregrine.
Peregrine is his main target, but if Alchemax shows up, he's happy to kick them too.
Oh, absolutely. They're a rival company. He wants their gear just as much as he wants Peregrine's gear.
And is he still in charge of Oscorp at the time?
I hadn't decided. I like the idea that Norman is in charge and Harry is just the operator of the ace suit.
Gotcha, yeah.
Because that leaves room for some juicy, I have to please my dad drama.
And that feels very true to Kamen Rider.
Feels very true. And then you'll be able to tell that this next one is kind of my pet favorite because of how much I wrote down about it. The third one that I have is Venom. Venom. So Venom is using the prototype that Peregrine based her suit off of. And so that's why they have such a similar design and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was rushed into production specifically to counter the fact that there is now her on the battlefield.
Yeah, yeah.
And my thoughts were, after several episodes of fighting this mysterious new Venom fighter, we, the viewers, would find out that it is being operated by one of her classmates, Eddie Brock, and good friend of Peregrine Parker.
Yeah.
And then eventually, in like a heated battle, they would shatter each other's faceplates and realize who the other is.
Yes.
And he would have like a little bit of a breakdown and throw his damaged belt down a storm drain and flee the battlefield.
And then who finds the damaged belt that got thrown down a storm drain?
Well, there's a local like prize fighter guy. He hangs out in the underground fighting rings of the city.
Oh.
Not necessarily for money or anything. He's kind of like a Blood Knight archetype. Somebody who has an obsession of, like, I want to have the best fight I possibly can. And then he finds this, which means he can have even bigger fights.
Yeah.
And thus, Cletus Kasady becomes Carnage.
Oh, okay.
He repairs the Venom suit, he spray paints it red, and he just shows up in fights and is like, fight me. Let's go. Let's go fight me. So he's very fun. I have him more as somebody who just likes a good fight instead of the weird creepiness that he usually is.
Yeah, yeah.
So like he's perfectly happy to like finish fighting Peregrine and then just leave and be like, thanks, that was fun. Bye.
Cool. See, same time next week.
And then vice versa. Sometimes, like, I'm thinking there will be at least one episode where she, like, can't get away from her civilian obligations and is worried that, like, everything's going to go horrible. And then Carnage just beats the heck out of whatever cyborg there is that week. Because he's like, well, there's no one else to fight.
Oh, that would be really fun to see, especially since I feel like a lot of the time likes fights is not a very common character trait. It's usually, you know, like grudge match or a death match.
Yeah, I like the idea of someone who just enjoys the battle.
Yeah, it's not I like fights.
I like to get the adrenaline going.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm picturing a very like Majima from Yakuza vibe.
I'm going to be upfront with you here, Rem.
That's
fine. All I know about Yakuza comes from you and Theo.
Okay, that's fair. It's exactly what I've been describing. Is it somebody who's just like, oh, I love fighting, and you're the only person who can give me a good fight, so I'm going to fight you all the time.
Mm. Now, is that something that could lead to, like, we're both on the same side here kind of a thing?
Potentially. I like the idea of, like, an episode where they're fighting, and then one of the main villains shows up, and Carnage is like, you interrupted us. How dare you? And then they get in a, like, a 2v1 fight. I definitely see him being kind of a force of chaos.
Yes.
Like, you never really know what side he's going to jump in on, because it just depends on who he thinks is going to give him the best fight.
Mm.
Which realistically probably translates to he's going to jump in on the side of whoever's losing.
Okay, okay.
Because he's going to go, oh, that's the stronger one. I want to fight that one.
Cletus Cassidy is giving me very strong, like, former professional wrestler vibes.
Oh, God, like, you're so right.
He recognizes who's the face and who's the heel.
Oh, absolutely. He wants to win, but he wants to work for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I made him way cooler than he is in canon. Cletus Cassidy sucks. But my Cletus Cassidy is super cool.
I would agree. I like your Cletus Cassidy much better than I like anything that I've read about canon Cletus Cassidy.
And then, importantly, we do actually have a third user of the Venom suit.
Oh?
/ still second. I'm thinking roughly half a season after the disappearance of Eddie Brock, he shows back up as Agent Venom, in which he has stolen and modified a new suit from Alchemax. And now he is explicitly on the side of good. He is fighting Alchemax, but he's a little bit more vicious and a little bit less merciful than Peregrine is. He's angry about them manipulating him.
Mm. Gotcha.
He tends not to necessarily fight the cyborgs as much. He tends to fight the Ace users. He's here to fight the other Kamen Riders.
Mm. Gotcha.
And then just for fun, I included Black Cat.
Excellent.
And I thought it would be really funny if instead of being another Ace user, because she's Black Cat, and we all know how Black Cat likes to be, I just thought it'd be really funny if she had, like, a more Super Sentai Power Rangers-esque suit,
mm-hmm.
where instead of the big armored look, it's just, like, a person in a jumpsuit with a helmet. And honestly, I didn't change a lot about her. I wanted to have gay flirting. She's still Felicia Hardy. She's still just like, well, excellent. Hey there, spider.
Yeah, yeah.
Except now it's gay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I support that. Now, real quick, since you did talk about flirting.
Yes.
What does Peregrine's romance options look like?
Okay, well, so we obviously have the terrible idea of Black Cat. Do not go down that road, Peregrine. She's cool, but it's not going to work out. I'm thinking we just make it as dramatic as possible, and we just dump in all of the big ones, right? We have our MJ, we have our Betty Brandt over at the Bugle, mm-hmm. we have our Gwen, and we just go full drama with it. We have all of them in there. The secret is that it's just going to end with a poly relationship.
Hey, there you go.
That's because I'm bad at deciding things.
Hey, you know what? Now, that just gave me the really funny idea of, like, the Polycule group chat. Depending on how many of them would know about Peregrine being the masked spider. It's just like, oh, hey, where's Perry? Like, I think I saw her at school. Oh, no, she's at the grocery store. Oh, no, she's at work.
So, weirdly, with the Kamen Rider series, it's this generally this weird middle ground where it's usually a secret who the Kamen Rider is for the obvious reasons of we don't want the enemy to know.
Yeah.
But it's not generally something that's particularly secretive amongst the friend groups. In most Kamen Rider series, the friends of the title writer are usually their, like, support team.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, this is the person that runs interference when I need to get away from something. This is the person that helps me get my upgrades, things like that.
And then, you know, sometimes they get an upgrade too.
Sometimes they get an upgrade too. So I definitely think that within a reasonable period of time, they would know.
Good. That's like one of my least favorite things is like a, who do you tell about your secret identity? Like, I can't tell anybody about my secret identity because I'm tortured.
It would put you in danger. No, it would put me in danger for other people to know. Me knowing doesn't put me in any danger.
Yes, yeah.
In fact, it helps.
It helps you be safer because I'm around to give excuses for where you are.
I can give excuses. I'm not constantly badgering you, like, where'd you go? I know where you went. You're saving the world. Outside of the big recurring characters, I did, just for fun, think about, like, a couple of who would be interesting cyborgs for just, like, one-off episodes.
Yeah.
And I've decided that the most interesting ones I could come up with, because realistically, a lot of them, I don't even have to change. Rhino is just going to be Rhino. Like, he doesn't have to do anything. But the ones that I thought I could make something the most interesting out of were Morbius, where I made it so that he is a cyborg that can drain the power from machines. So she has to, like, beat him really fast, right? Or else he's going to absorb all of the energy from her suit.
Sorry, I just pictured Morbius, like, jaw deep in one of those, like, box generators.
It's just a pre-fight snack. And then I liked the idea of Chameleon getting, like, a two-part episode, because it's like, ooh, this is a cyborg that can pretend to be a normal human.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, spooky. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's MJ. Who knows? So I thought that one was cool. And then the other one, just because I thought it was a funny visual, like, picturing this as a Kamen Rider Super Sentai style, like, rubber suit monster. So Hammerhead, my favorite, like, weird mobster villain. I just picture him as, like, a shark-themed monster, but with Tommy guns for hands. And I can like, viscerally picture that in rubber suit monster form.
Oh my god.
Like a hammerhead shark head on, like, a mobster body, but his hands are Tommy guns.
Oh my god, Rem.
It's the best.
That's incredible.
I think that's all the villains I have for now, other than the normal ones that are just like, Vulture. He's a vulture.
Oh, I forgot to ask earlier. We didn't talk about how old is Peregrine Parker.
Oh, so I was picturing her as being, like, early college. It's like 90s Spider-Man time frame.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah. Old enough to have a little bit of freedom in terms of not necessarily going to class every single day, but young enough to still just be an intern.
Yeah, yeah. Probably an unpaid intern, if I had to guess.
Oh, absolutely. Unpaid intern. She's in Cyber City College on a scholarship.
Now, you talking about internships and college and stuff made me think about, what would Peregrine Parker like to quote-unquote be when she grows up? Like, is there a career that she would be satisfied with after being a superhero?
So I think her initial thought would have been be a reporter, right? Mm-hmm. To go with the whole being an intern at the Bugle. I think as this has gone on, and she's tinkered with the suit and things like that, she has started to think that she might enjoy a technology-based career. But she's hesitant about that because she sees all of these super scientist villains.
Yeah.
So I feel like it might end up with something where, like, in her epilogue, she ends up taking a role as, like, an oversight person of, like, I'm making sure that people are using their gifts in a way that benefits people and not hurts them.
Gosh, that is an inspired career choice.
Right? She had a bit of a roller coaster of where she wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
I've also just now, right now, on the air, decided that she is going to take the remnants of Alchemax when all is said and done.
Yes, do it.
Because that sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Dismantle that organization.
From the ground up.
Mm-hmm. So, what does Peregrine Parker look like? What does she look like transformed?
Oh, yeah, I should probably describe that instead of just relying on links to things, shouldn't I?
I mean, I do plan on posting or, like, linking or whatever the art that I did of her, if it's still valid and accurate.
Okay. Untransformed, she is a fairly tall, brown-haired ponytail girl that wears what most people would describe as, like, kind of close to the classic, like, school delinquent look. She's got, like, a funky jacket over, like, her skirt with her big socks. And, of course, she has a big belt so she can stick her big belt buckle to it when she needs to transform. You know, much like any good Kamen Rider, there's no visible pockets on her outfit, but she still will just, like, reach behind her back and pull out the belt buckle. And nobody ever questions this.
Look, this is known. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. She's definitely just, like, very stylish. Leans into the, like, kind of punky, kind of delinquent-y aesthetic of, like, I'm wearing things that don't necessarily go well together, but I'm gonna make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she transforms, she's in a really cool red and blue armor with, like, some spider designs. There's a big ol' heart on the chest, which is great. Big fan of the big heart on the chest. And then there's, like, some spikes on, like, the gauntlets and on the shins that she uses for, like, fighting and, like, blocking things. So, like, you go to swipe at her with a sword and she, like, catches it on the spike. It's very cool. And she definitely is a little bit more of a, I want to say, like, bulky spider person. Like, she doesn't do as much of the acrobatics as most spider people do. Because she's got the big armor on. But she still, like, does, like, the wall runs and the web stuff. I'm thinking, like, she does her Kamen Rider kick by webbing onto the person and pulling herself towards them at high speed.
Gotcha. So, her webs then are, I'm assuming they're part of the suit. That's yes, not, like, an organic web.
Yes, she can't web unless she is transformed.
And that was actually going to be my next question. I genuinely don't know if it's a thing in Kamen Rider to have powers that stay consistent even when untransformed.
It depends on the season. Most seasons, no. But occasionally we have some that are weird about it. Like, we had Kamen Rider Wizard, where he is just a wizard. it's right there on the tin. I don't know if it counts as a superpower, but there's one where he's a doctor. So, like,
okay.
Outside of the suit, he still has doctor powers.
Nice.
I think there's one where he's a ghost, but I haven't seen that one yet. I assume it's like Danny Phantom style, but I'm not sure.
Nice.
But yeah, I'm definitely thinking when she is in her civilian form, she does not have extra powers. So she's got that little bit of vulnerability there. And I think that's the end of the, like, pre-written stuff I have.
That's okay. Let me switch back into the questions and see if there's anything else that we wanted to talk about.
Questions are great because I can just make stuff up for those.
Oh, here's a fun question. For the two Spider-Verse movies that we've gotten so far in particular, music is very important. And the music of the series is very powerful. It is very stirring. It is very iconic.
Yes.
Have you given any thought to what kind of music you would use in Peregrine's series?
Yes, but I'm going to need you to not judge me.
There are very specific circumstances in which I will judge you. And I am almost 99% certain that this will not be occurring.
I feel like one of the big musical influences for her soundtrack would be Nightcore.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm just lots of like high intensity, high speed, high pitched music. Mm-hmm. High BPM, all of it. Just so mm-hmm. much energy.
Nice.
And then obviously when she's transforming, you get the spectacular Spider-Man. Because that's legally required.
It is. And especially since it's such an iconic guitar sting as well.
It's such an iconic guitar sting. You can't get away without using it.
Okay, I thought of another question.
Okay, hit me.
So if there was to be some kind of event for Masked Spider that had other spider heroes visiting her, who would you want to visit and why? Canon and Fanon.
First option, we obviously need to get Tokusatsu Spider-Man in here. Mm-hmm. Leopard on. Mm-hmm. I feel like that'd be hilarious, right? Like,
yes.
Double transformation sequence. It'd be fun. Similarly, but on the opposite side, I think she would get along really well with Penny. They both kind of feel like they have the same vibes to me of, like, mm-hmm. kind of excitable. Seem like they'd get along. Have a good time. Yes.
There'd be a lot of resonance there.
They'd play video games together, probably. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In terms of, like, for, like, interesting drama, though, I definitely think she would not get along with Miguel at all.
You want Miguel and your team just to antagonize.
Yeah, because I feel like she would instinctively flinch away from Miguel.
Smart.
Because of how much he would... Well, A, he's very involved with his universe's Alchemax. It's where he got his powers. But also, just, I feel like he would remind her a lot of the, like, progress for progress's sake that she's been fighting against. I feel like she would very much be like, just because you could, should you have?
Yeah.
Wow, it's so interesting that you put together this, like, multiversal police force, Miguel. Very neat. I don't want to be part of that, thanks. So definitely wouldn't get along with him. And I want to say just a lot of the traditional Peter Parkers, I feel like she'd have to get over some personal internal hangups of, if I hang around with a Peter Parker, I'm going to have to hear my dead name constantly.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like she could get along with a lot of them, but she'd have to get past that initial, like, reaction of, like, oh God, no, I can't.
That was something that I was thinking of. Well, something adjacent to that I was thinking of earlier today, which is, like, do you think that all of the Peters Parker in, like, the Spider Society, like, do you think they have to come up with, like, nicknames for each other? Because
oh, like, absolutely. Because, like, we always say Peter B., right?
Yeah, like, you can't call someone Peter. You can't call someone Parker. You can't call someone Peter Parker. You probably can't even say, like, oh, Peter Benjamin Parker or whatever. Whatever other middle names.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of those.
That's just giving me flashbacks to the after school art program that I did in middle school, where we had three Kates. And so they got together and they nicknamed themselves Kate 1, Kate 2, and Kate 3. And they would respond to the number. Like, oh, if that's, you said, really good. Oh, hey, 2, or like, hey, 3. And they would respond.
That's cute. I like that. I think we can canonically confirm that they have not come up with a system like that, given the scene where Miguel says, stop Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And they all just look at each other and they're like,
No, not you! Miles Morales!
See, this is why Peregrine is going to do fine, because she has her own name.
Because she is truly the one and only Peregrine Parker.
And she's the best at being Peregrine Parker.
We wouldn't have this problem if more Peters were trans.
Right? Like, if all of the Peters transed their genders, they could choose their own names, and it would be great. They'll probably all still start with P, but, you know...
Yeah. You know what? Here.
Petra Parker, right there.
Mm-hmm. Right there.
Piper Parker.
Pear Parker.
Oh, that's a good one. I like it.
As in P-E-R-E.
We've already got a Penelope. Mm-hmm. So we can't have that one. Mm-hmm. Penny with a Y.
Mm-hmm. Patrick.
There's a lot of good P names.
I am just on behind the name right now and sorting through the letter P column. Perry. Perry spelled P-A-R-R-Y.
Oh, that's fun. I like that, actually.
Paris.
Paris Parker. That's my next OC. That's my next OC, Paris Parker.
Patrick Parker. Paula Parker.
Ooh, Paula Parker. That flows.
Or just Paul Parker. Pearl.
See, Spider-Man, it's easy. Get on it.
Peggy Parker. Pellegrino Parker.
It's the easiest thing in the world to not share names. Sounds like Spider-Man's having a skill issue.
Oh, Pepper Parker. That's fun.
Oh, that's a cute one. Big fan.
Mm-hmm. Petronella.
I would read a story about Pepper Parker.
Philbert with a PH. Phil.
Phil.
Phil Parker.
That'd be a good one. I'd read that story.
Okay, no, I know this one's fake. They have the name Pinocchio listed in behind the name.
They have Pinocchio listed?
They do.
I refuse to believe that that wasn't made up for the story.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, yeah, that no. Nobody born no, since I, then has ever been named Pinocchio again.
I trust this website a lot less now because a few listings down from Pinocchio as a behind the name meeting is, would you like to guess, Rem?
Okay, so it's going to be after P-I alphabetically.
After P-I, or wait, excuse me, it's before.
Oh, before, okay.
Still
I'm going to go with... I'm trying to think of, like, fictional characters with P names.
Put it this way, it is not a human's name.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm lost now. What is it?
Pikachu!
Pikachu!
The name Pikachu is on behind the name!
Pikachu! That's my next OC, Pikachu Parker.
Hey, you know what? That's the power of a spider Sony. You can just do whatever.
You can just say, this is Pikachu Parker. He's Pikachu.
And also, like, I think the big thing about Spider-Sonas, too, is that they're all so clearly intended as, you know, like, hey, this is my fan character. Like, I'm just doing this for fun.
And yeah, like, you don't have to get, like, super cerebral about it.
You don't have to be super defensive about, like, hey, I'm making this character and I'm not intending any copyright infringement to Marvel or Sony or anything.
Wasn't Sun Spider somebody's Spider Sona originally?
Yeah, I was gonna say the notable exception to the rule is that Sun Spider was a Spider Sona created after Into the Spider-Verse aired or was released, and she got canonized.
That's so cool.
It's so cool, and this is just reminding me of like. Gem Sonas from back when Steven Universe was airing, and everyone's like, we should do an animated special that's just all the Gem Sonas. And
yes!
Like, that sounds fun, but also it sounds like it'd be even worse than trying to work on an actual animated production.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, Marvel, if you're listening, Peregrine would be great in the next Spider-Verse movie.
I would love to see it, honestly. Look, Marvel, I'll send you my sketches and everything.
They're good sketches, I promise. I'll send you this little notepad document I have about all her villains.
Do it. But yeah, I guess last question then, Rem, is there anything else that you want to mention about Peregrine? Like any other bits of trivia, favorite food, cats or dogs?
Well, definitely cats. She is a cat girly.
Felicia says thank you.
There's nothing that I had before, but now that you just said, like, any weird fun facts, immediately all that popped into my head was that in her universe, she has the high score on Space Invaders.
Nice.
I don't know why that's the specific thing that jumped into my head, but it did.
If you want more random stuff, I can just pull up random questions from this extremely long character inventory that I've been filling out for Spider-Gold.
I am probably going to spend the next hour on the, like, incorrect quotes generator and being like, which ones of these sound like Peregrine?
God, I love incorrect quotes generator so much. That person, the people behind incorrect quotes generator and fantasy name generators are doing God's work every single day.
They really are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 10 out of 10.
Oh, here's a fun question. What is Peregrine's most treasured possession?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, at the risk of being derivative, her camera, probably?
Nice.
Yeah, probably her camera.
I feel like not enough emphasis is given to, like, Peter being a photographer.
Yeah, it's usually just kind of a background thing.
Yeah, it's usually just like, oh yeah, get me pictures of Spider-Man.
Pictures of Spider-Man.
And not get me good pictures of Spider-Man.
It's always get me pictures of Spider-Man, and never how is Spider-Man.
Is Peregrine Parker the kind of person who will listen to the same song over and over, or does it drive her nuts when people do that?
Peregrine has one big playlist that's like 12 hours long. Instead of a bunch of little playlists, and she just puts that on shuffle, and it infuriates people. Like, it will go from the Inception soundtrack to 100 Yeks, and people are so upset with her.
As someone with a playlist that is just titled Horde, I understand that. Because it's literally just every song that I hear on the radio that I like. It's like, this goes in the Horde.
This does go in the Horde.
And I think that's it. Or I think those are all the questions that I had. So, if you are ready, Rem, we have the last question for today.
Oh no, last question.
Well, last question for now.
I feel threatened.
You can come back and talk about Peregrine more when you finish outlining her season.
Her entire season? We'll do a recap podcast about a show that doesn't exist.
For that, we'll take over and fireboot you first. I'm sure Tanner and Lindsay would not mind.
This is our podcast now.
I mean, look. So your last question for today, Rem, is why do you love Peregrine so much?
This is going to be a little silly, but I'm not going to lie. It's the art you did. I was vaguely into the idea and like, kind of liked it and was like thinking about it here and there, and then you drew those sketches and I was like, no, this is all I'm gonna think about for the next week. I do keep those saved on my phone so that I can be like, hey, do you want to see my OC?
Aww. Thank you, that is very gratifying.
I'm glad. Also, I just really like Kamen Rider, so.
Mm-hmm. That is true and good. Okay, so thank you so much, Rem, for coming back and for being the first guest back on the newly revived The Home for Wayward OCs.
I'm happy to. I love it here.
Well, thank you. I'm, as always, very glad to hear that people like my podcast and like being on my podcast.
Absolutely. It's a good time. It's a good chance to info dump about silly things that you don't normally get to info dump about.
Absolutely. So, where would you like to be found on the internet, if you would like to be found, that is? And do you have anything you want to shout out and or promote?
Yeah, so I can be found on the Kingdom Hearts A Forgotten Era podcast, currently on hiatus, but hopefully coming back soon. Crossing our fingers on that one. And I can also be found on Blue Sky. I just need to remember how the URLs on Blue Sky look.
It's usually like username.bsky.social.
Okay, so it's that, and the username is REM Speedwagon.
Nice.
Yeah, and I have links to all my other stuff through there.
Excellent. And speaking of social media, the Home for Weird OCs is a part of their Corner Podcast Network. We can be found through Acast and your local podcasting platform of choice. Our theme song is Viola by Poddington Bear, courtesy of the Free Music Archives. We can be reached at weirdocpod@gmail.com or at weirdocpod on Twitter, and hopefully soon on Blue Sky if I get my act together. This podcast is partly recorded on the ancestral lands of the Kiakapui, Kaw, Osage, and the Ochaithi Shukalan. If you would like to talk about Wayward or the other Corner Podcast Network shows, we have our own Discord server, and there should be a perma invite up on social media, but if not, just like let us know, and we will be on there, and we will get you set up. And there is also a Corner Podcast Network Tumblr account, which is cornerpodcastnetwork.tumblr.com. I am desperately trying to revive it. It is a process. And since Wayward is officially back in business, if you or someone you know is interested in talking about your original characters on the show, feel free to drop me a line if you are interested, either through the pinned tweet on the Wayward Twitter account, which has the link to the Google form, or you can just email me directly, or I guess send an ask on the Tumblr account. That also would work. And as with all podcasts, it is incredibly helpful if you can subscribe and rate us on your listening platform of choice, because that helps us to find a wider audience and to brighten more people's days. So, thank you all for listening. This has been the Home for Wayward OCs, and we hope you enjoyed your stay! Now, one thing I don't think we have... No, I don't want to do Discord whiteboard. Stop. I clicked on the wrong thing.
Benvenuti nel mondo dei Pokemakers.
Hold on, what are you doing?
Oh, well, I was just getting ready to record Season 2 of Pokemakers. The new games we're making, Pokemon Marble and Bronze, are set in the Rencia region, which is inspired by Italy.
True! And we're making new Fakemon for that region, such as our new mascot, Spadato. And we're drawing on aspects of Italian culture, including the Roman Empire and the Renaissance.
Which, of course, means... Da Vinci!
Right, but we're inspired by Italy. That doesn't mean we're recording in Italian.
Mamma mia!
Here we go again! Enjoy Season 2 of Pokemakers. Makers every other Saturday on the Pocket Podcast Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
Because we've gotta make them all.